Welcome to the Rush Valley Podcast. Today, we'll be talking about everything outdoors, family, and some badass stories. I am your host, Anders Launce, and today, we'll be talking with Chance Wadsworth from Wadsworth Waterfowl. If you enjoy waterfowl hunting, then this is your guy. Chance puts his heart and soul into hunting birds with his family and friends. From sunup to sundown, he is constantly thinking about hunting, whether that be gaining permission for hunting, helping friends harvest some birds, perfecting his game as a caller. Chance has been waterfowling for quite some time now, and he has some awesome advice and some sick-ass stories. So, Chance, welcome to the show, brother. How you been? How's the season going?
Pretty good, man, and thanks for having me on. This is awesome. Season's been going pretty good. Had a lot of good hunts, which could have killed more or did something different, but you're always going to have those.
Yeah. So this is your second podcast now, so you're basically a professional.
Yeah, no.
Well, I know you know how to bullshit, so podcasting is basically bullshitting and having a good time. Why don't you introduce yourself to everyone here? Tell them where you're from, what you're doing now. Let us know.
So my name is Chance Wadsworth. I graduated from Ellsworth, Wisconsin, and I lived in a little town right on real close to the Mississippi River, Hager City. And, I've been hunting, I don't know, ever since I can remember. Yeah. My dad always had me in the trapping basket when he would go check traps. I killed my first deer when I was like six. I used to skin muscle and stuff. And I've just been around hunting pretty much all my life, man. I love it.
Yeah.
It's part of who I am.
So you're originally from Ohio, correct?
Yes. I was born in Fort Clinton, Ohio. If you look at Ohio, there's a peninsula at the northern part right in the center, and I lived right on that peninsula on Lake Erie.
Okay. So, I mean, from what I kind of know, you did a lot of deer hunting, and you just said you did a lot of trapping. When did you kind of get into waterfowl?
So, I think when I really fell in love with it was I was on the school bus and I saw in the neighbor's pond I ducks fly into this pond, and I got off school the next day or that day, and I drove my dirt bike across the field and went over and asked him. I said, "Hey, do you mind if this weekend is youth duck opener? Do you mind if I, do some hunting over there? Be just by myself." So I got permission, and I, with my phone light, my gun, I had some of my dad's old decoys. I drove over there on my dirt bike early in the morning, and I sat up, and I mean, I used a whole box of shells just to kill six ducks. I mean, and it was crazy. I had 200-300 ducks just piling into this pond. I don't know if they just were using it as a staging area or if there was some, I don't think there was any kind of vegetation in there that they were eating, but I think they were using it as a staging area. And that's when I fell in love. I mean, I knew right then and there, like what my focus was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a pretty great first hunt, and I don't think many more always usually go like that. Some do, but I don't think it's always like that.
No, the luck I drew to just go over there, I was on the X, just to be able to look out, like, just the luck of me looking out the window at that particular time, seeing those birds dive in there early in the morning on the school bus and all of it. It was, I don't know, you could call it luck or you could call it destiny. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty cool. So what are you doing right now? I know you're going to school. Where are you going to school now?
I'm finishing up my degree at UW River Falls, right down the road from Ellsworth. I'm getting my degree in chemistry. It's my last semester. Currently I'm working at the nuclear power plant in Welch, Minnesota, Prairie Island. That's my goal, is to get a house job there. That's my plan.
Yeah. That sounds like fun, going to school for chemistry.
It has its days, man. Sometimes it's cool and sometimes it's not. But fortunately, I kind of am weird and I like that kind of stuff, math and science.
Yeah.
But no. That helps a lot when you like something.
For sure. So when, as a waterfowl hunter, you say your first time going out, taking your dad's decoys to now, how have you kind of evolved as a hunter, or how have you? Where did you kind of start learning how to become a waterfowl hunter?
Well, I mean, it's a combination of everything, man. It's a little bit of, like, talking with my dad, a little bit talking with, you know, people older, way older than me, you know, about what they've learned. But a lot of it, I'd have to say, is a lot of YouTube and, you know, TV shows. The YouTube is just blown up with information. I mean, you can learn how to do anything on YouTube, but a little bit of social media. A lot more people are posting informational stuff on, like, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, stuff like that. But more so, mine was with just, I honestly think I've watched every waterfowl hunting video on YouTube. I don't think that there's one that I haven't watched.
Yeah. Who's your favorite? Who's your go-to?
Well, it depends on the situation.
If we're doing goose hunting, if you just want to watch a good goose hunting video.
If I want to watch the best goose hunting video, it's made by Dreamweaver Creative. The title of the video is Angel Wing Outfitters plus Molt Gear, Day 1, Day 2, and Day 3. And if you want to watch some of the most beautiful, just coolest pictures and awesome calling, I mean, go watch that video on YouTube. I mean, it's in snow, it's like 10 degrees out, and the birds just eat it up. And I mean, it's just bright, sunny day, but it's so cold that the birds just have to eat, and they destroy them, and they do it so perfectly in the video. It's so pretty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those days are what makes the bad days fun.
Oh yeah.
So I know you got some stuff started now. You got some big plans. What are kind of your goals as a waterfowl hunter now? At first, it was kind of, you know, obviously everyone does it for, you know, the love of the sport, but do you have some other things that you want to do?
Absolutely. So my girlfriend and I, Emmy, we have their plans to do some pretty big things. Conservation is going to be one of those really big things that I'm super excited about. Not like small conservation, like I'm talking like hundreds of acre kind of conservation. Mm-hmm. Is our plan, is our goal.
Yeah.
I really, you know, it's a very big goal, very big dream of mine, but I really want to win worlds. I really want to retire from worlds. Three time world champion is what I want to be.
As a caller.
I have a long road ahead of me. As a competition caller, yep, I have a long road ahead of me, and I know that, and I got to keep practicing, but that is a big goal of mine. And maybe down the road, I want to make my own call. I have some ideas that I have not seen any call makers do. I'm going to just keep those a secret right now until, you know, know if I ever get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you're
kind
meaning, yeah. So as like a, you know, when you're younger, you know, everyone wants to get out there and kill birds and just kill birds. But, you know, as you get older, you start realizing when you take so much away from something, you kind of got to give back to it. So what I'm kind of getting out of you being a conservationist is you want to buy or get some land and you know, make some habitat for ducks or waterfowl, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That's cool. That's a big goal, but it makes, you know, working towards something is always fun. I also know, and maybe you know the kid too, Matt Rusted. You ever heard of
him? I know. I've heard of him. I've never met him personally, but I know of him.
So he used to wrestle, and I just kind of, I knew him from wrestling, and then all of a sudden I kind of saw that he works for CNS Custom Calls, and he's like a, I don't know, he works for Shields or whatever, but he's a pretty dang good caller. I know he's gone to Worlds before, I think. I could be wrong, but maybe someday I should try and talk to him and get him on here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, with that section, kind of, I want to move on to kind of, you know, I know you kind of have been getting into more gear stuff, decoys, blinds, guns, whatever it is. If I've never waterfowl hunted in my life and I want to field goose hunt, what are kind of the first things you're doing to scout a field?
Well, let's just go with early season right away. You know, you're going to want to scout from about, I don't know, 7 o'clock until about 9:30. That's probably the best time to scout. And in the afternoon, unfortunately around this area, the birds fly after shooting light if it's a sunny day. If it's a cloudy day, they'll come beforehand, but most of the time in the early season, it's never cloudy in the afternoon. And after that, once you find your field, you know, you ask your permission and stuff like that, I'd recommend pre-cutting or pre-picking. Which, if you got a hedge trimmer, that is the lifesaver.
Mm-hmm.
Doing that and cutting your grass out of a ditch. And I'm talking real nice, luscious, green grass that's super easy to fold at the bases. And then sticking your stirrup strap to your blind. And you don't need a big coffin blind. You can get a layout style blanket one, and that'll work just fine. It's actually probably better because it's low profile.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need, if you're on the X, you really don't need that many decoys. I mean, you only need maybe, if you got full bodies, eight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the other day, you know, it was just after early season, we used 14 decoys, and we shot a 10-man limit out of it. We were on the X, and, you know, you don't need, 40 dozen decoys. Sometimes you do, but most of the time you don't if you're on the X.
Yeah.
And you can either use silhouettes, or you can use full bodies. I mean, if you use silhouettes, I always kind of multiply that number by 2 because you can only really see them in like 2 directions, like really good. So I would multiply that. So if you want, I like what I would do. And a lot of people, like for the spread situation, a lot of people like to do shapes and letters. I hate that. I don't do that. I mean, you can, and I've done it, and I've killed birds, but I like to be more, like, natural and, in fact, like, no, make openings where you want them to land. And make it blob. Make it, I don't know, make the opening where they're going to land big enough to where the flock can fit in. I mean, and all I really do.
Mm-hmm.
As for calling, man, I mean, them birds, they can't tell the difference between a good caller and a bad caller. I wouldn't say, if they're can't tell the difference. My personal opinion.
Yeah.
What they could tell the difference in, though, is the power, like, you know, like how loud your call actually is. But, yeah, I mean, and if you're on the X, a cluck every 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Maybe not, and that's another thing, is when you scout them birds, see what they're doing on the ground. If they're, like, in the 10-man limit they killed the other day, for three nights, they never made a sound while the ones that were on the ground, never, all the other ones were coming, like, yeah, flying in the air. Never. So, we never shoot circle in the area, going off and coming back, and kind of had to coax them a little bit, but for the most part, you didn't have to call at all. They just were coming there. And you had to have your hide to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's, I mean, for a beginner, that's what I would do, is recommend being on an X, and the guy who scouts the most is going to be the most successful, hands down, 100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but, you know, scouting's, I would say, kind of the easy part, right? When... Go ahead.
It can be, like, you know, if you own a big pickup truck like I do and not a fuel-efficient car, it costs a lot of money to scout a large amount of area. I'll go through a half a tank of gas in one morning driving around.
Yeah.
I'll spend 4 hours in my truck. I mean, you cover a lot of ground. And, you know, for someone who doesn't have that much money, that might be the harder part. You know, getting up early, they might be a morning person, or they might not find the hard work to setting it up and stuff in the morning, but the money issue might be a thing. I can see both sides of the story. Kind
of. Yeah. No one ever said hunting was cheap, though.
Right, right. And well, I mean, if you're going to do it right, do it right.
Yeah, exactly. So, but once you do, you know, once you do get a field scouted, I mean, chances are, you know, you got to go get permission. And I know you kind of have been doing things different than what the average person is doing. Do you want to kind of talk about the most kind of effective way how you've kind of gotten permission for people?
Well, the first thing is I always go to their house the first time I ask them. That's number one. Like, it's a lot easier to say no to someone on the phone than it is in person. Plus, it just, you know, they get to see your face, they know who you are. And if they want to talk for a half hour, 45 minutes, you know, do it. You know, because chances are, I've had owners tell me no right away, and then just happen to chit chat 45 later. I'll give you my number. I'll let you know if they're going to hunt here. You can see if the other people are out there or something like that. I mean,
yeah,
I've had that happen to me. I mean, because a lot of these people are older people, and, you know, they, no one really, it's unfortunate, but no one really comes and talks to them. They enjoy that might be the best part of their day. You made their day and stuff. And I always get their number, even if you know where they live, always get their number, because you can text them or call them in the future or next season, something like that. And another thing I recommend is sending out thank you cards at the end of the season. They love it.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down, if they know you got it doctored up really good,
mm-hmm,
in order for it to taste decent. Yeah. Unless you like wild game.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I've been hunting this guy's property for, I don't know, 3-4 years now. And unfortunately, he passed away, but I found out that he had kept my recipe and filed it away, you know, and the wife told me that he really thought a lot of that, and, you know, stuff stuff like that goes a long, long way. And you make people's day. And, you know, that just stuff like that that you got to do that'll help you. It's just little things.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't do those kind of things anymore. So maybe that's the reason why, maybe that's the reason you get the permission or the following year as well.
Yep.
You never know what. Go ahead.
I just try to like do as much as I possibly can, because I mean, in the end of the day, I mean, they really don't have to tell you yes. I mean, it's their land. I mean, you know, you're just using it, and you know, always pick up your shells after you hunt, or your wads, or make sure you pick up your trash, or even if you're going in there and you see some trash, pick it up, because they'll notice. I'm telling you, they'll notice.
Yeah. No, for sure. So, kind of after you get your permission, what are you kind of using or running for decoys now?
Well, I'm very fortunate. I run, I'm field staffer for Big Al's and Bigfoot decoys, Big Al silhouettes and Bigfoot full bodies. I personally believe that those are the two best companies. I wouldn't be field staffing for a company that I did not like. Mm-hmm. Big Al's, the reason why I love them so much is because they're very durable. They are darker. They're bigger. He has 11 different poses, I do believe, now, where no other silhouette decoy that I know of has that many, or company has that many poses, and it really makes your spread look good.
Mm-hmm.
With the full bodies, I love Bigfoot, man. I've seen Bigfoot decoys that are 20 years old and they still look brand new. As long as the flocking on any decoy is going to come off the head when you throw them around and put them in the trailer and stuff.
Yeah.
So you just got to touch them up every, you know, 3 years or so. But, the paint and the plastic that, Bigfoot uses on their original decoys is next to none. I mean, it's the best, in my personal opinion. They're so durable. You order those, and you'll have them for your whole life.
Yeah, I've used some Bigfoots. I use Dive Bomb. I like Dive Bomb. I mean, really, decoys nowadays are good. But like you're saying, you gotta have a, you know, if you want to spend a couple grand every year, you kinda gotta get some decoys that are durable and the paint stays on the flocking.
Yep.
But then again, you're spending money left and right.
Right. And I mean, I don't know. I made 19 dozen black and white decoys out of the feed signs that farmers post in front of the corn. That like tell you like what brand, what feed companies they're from.
Yep.
I got 4 decoys out of each one, and I painted them and then flocked them, and I've killed so many birds over those things out of the last year. I mean, crazy amount. Yeah. They worth money.
Yeah, they're good fillers,
but I did
too.
I did that just to save some money. I mean, it took me about 100 hours. No, like, not even joking, it's like 100 hours in total to do everything. But I don't know, the first time I landed geese in those and killed geese over them, it just, I don't know, it gave me a little bit different of a feeling. It was super cool to know that I made something that fooled geese.
Hell yeah. No, for sure. That'd be badass. Same with kind of like you're saying, you kind of wanted to create your own call. I mean, I feel like that first goose you kind of call in, it's going to be a little different than just any other goose.
Right. Right.
Oh, for sure. We went hunting out in North Dakota that one time together. Besides that, do you hunt much water, or are you more, you know, sitting in fields?
Growing in high school, man, I hunted all water. I had a duck boat and mud motor, and I did it all. I loved it. It was awesome. I don't know why the reason was, but the Mississippi up like 6 feet, and it washed for like 3 years, and it washed all the wild rice and bulrush out that we normally hunted, and the birds were just spread out over a way bigger area. So, I mean, I personally think the hunting was down. And I sold the boat, sold the motor, actually to buy my truck. And I'm glad I did that. Put me ahead a little bit. But there's something about water hunting that just tickles me pink that field hunting won't. But there's something about field hunting that tickles me pink that water hunting won't, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. I think when you got a goose flying over your head 15 feet above and you can hear their wings flapping, honking, there's not a lot that beats that.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, and I mean, we had plenty of duck hunts on water here in Wisconsin and in North Dakota. And I mean, it's pure. It's just pure, man. It's super cool.
Yeah, for sure. What, I know we kind of talked about this, and I know you've kind of built some of your own blinds. But are you kind of using layout blinds, or are you going to panel blinds, or what do you kind of find best that works for you?
It's all situational. A really well-known call maker, Scott Triney, he has this motto. He says you build an arsenal. You know, you didn't like. And I regret ever selling my first decoys, but he said don't ever sell anything. Because waterfowl hunting is about revolution, not. I can't make it work. But anyways, revolution. So like what works now will not work 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. But what worked 10 years from, you know, from what we were will work in 20 years. You know,
yeah.
Kind of get, you follow, it'll always come back around. Like they were using stocks and silhouettes like 30 years ago. That's all they used. And they were just destroying stocks and geese.
Yeah. Well,
then everybody started like wanting full bodies, and then, you know, now we're back to the silhouette thing.
Yeah.
So, I personally, you know, then you might have to downsize.
For sure.
But as for panel blinds, they're very, very comfortable. They work very well if you got a very short edge row or like a grass row that's in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
If I could hunt out of an A-frame, I would take it probably over the layout just because it's more comfortable, you're dry, you're off the ground, you're faster at, you know, getting your gun up, you can see the birds a whole lot better, but a lot of times a layout blind is better.
Yeah. No, I know, and people have kind of been hyping up the A-frames and panel blinds a lot, but there's some advantages and disadvantages for both.
Exactly, and that's why I believe in having both.
Yeah,
so that
for
way
sure.
You have one more option.
Mm-hmm. You know Stelt, Chad.
I do.
I mean, talking way back when, I went goose hunting with him a couple of years ago, and he's got one of those layout blinds that's one of them big ass gooses.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people used to sit in a freaking goose layout blind that was 4 or 5 feet long. I mean, we killed birds that day. So going off of what you said, I think there's something to be said about that for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and birds see. So, you know, birds fly from north to south, you know, twice a year. So it's like they see everything. You know, they see different setups, they see spreads they're getting shot at. You put a little twist into it sometimes, and I think maybe that might work.
Absolutely. If you know, like, what your buddies are doing, say you've got, you know, 3-4 guys that hunt kind of by themselves with other groups, and they're in your area, if you know what they're doing, do exactly opposite of what they're doing. Because they're probably pressuring them birds, and geese are very smart. Some people think that, you know, geese aren't very smart. They are very intelligent.
They're dumb until you hunt them.
Well, yeah. Once you educate them, they are very weary.
Yeah.
I remember last year, we used full bodies almost every single hunt, and full bodies and silhouettes. and we edge road hunt every single time. And I remember the birds in the area wouldn't even come down 90 yards. We literally had the greatest hide. Like, there was no way that the birds were seeing us. And they just didn't come down into this field because they were just so weary from getting shot at. So eventually we had to just hunt a different, you know, different group of birds. But I know that we educated those birds to not decoy into a field very well.
For sure. No. Yeah, birds, I mean, when they're flying from Canada all the way down south, they're going to see different setups. And when they get shot at, it just gets worse and worse.
Right.
From your 2020 or even this season, what can you name one of your favorite hunts?
They all hold a super special spot, but man,
if not, it's all right.
I'm gonna have to say, my favorite hunt was when I hunted in a bean field right behind where I used to live in Robert, 20-acre bean field. And it was hunting by myself. And, well, the reason why was Emmy had spotted some snow geese in the area, and that's, like, super rare for here.
Yeah.
And there was like, two of them. And they were flying in with these group of geese. And I ended up, I had them 60 yards from me. And I didn't know that snow geese, apparently if you hit them with a pebble, they fall. But I just didn't take the shot. I had them circle twice. Actually, I've had them circle more than twice, but twice was at 60. And I ended up landing like 500 birds in just stocks and silhouettes right behind my house.
Jesus.
I mean, That was probably one of the coolest. It was spitting rain, cloudy. It was the best conditions for goose hunting.
Yeah.
And landed, I mean, we could have shot. And they weren't even feeding in that field, too. So it was like all traffic. It was just the decoys and the calling. And it was super cool. I have some videos, and I'll have to post those, but.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was super cool.
For sure. When things work out, it's always a little more fun.
Yeah, I never shot that day, though.
Yeah.
Never. I was after those snow geese, and I never shot a Phillips, and I never shot that day.
Huh.
Still my favorite hunt.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. I know you love goose hunting, but for me, I love duck hunting. So we got to kind of talk about some duck hunting. I know we duck hunted a few times, maybe once with Stelt on the river when we jumped those. I don't even know how many mallards there were.
There was a lot.
We were young and dumb. That was.
I remember you put.
Yeah.
I felt bad, but at the same time, I was like, "Fuck, we gotta go. We gotta get these birds."
I was so pissed. But we shot one duck and we thought we were badass. It was a pretty one.
Yes, he was. He was very big and very, very plumed out.
So I know, like I said, you're more serious about goose hunting than duck hunting. Would you say that?
Yeah, if I had to choose between a greasy goose hunt and a greasy duck hunt, I'd probably choose the goose.
You're nuts.
But do I ever get tickled pink about shooting green beans in a field or in a little pothole? Absolutely. I would never. If I had to choose between a really bad day of duck hunting and shooting probably 140, 150 inch deer, I'd choose a bad day of duck hunting. No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to piss some people off.
Never mind.
No,
I love deer hunting, man. I just don't have the patience for it, and that's probably why I don't deer hunt, because I cannot sit still. I can't.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Oh, I know. Trust me, I'm standing up in my stand, stretching my legs. I feel like I'm freaking 70 years old. At least when I'm duck hunting, we can bullshit and fuck around together. Right. Especially when you hunt with Stella.
Right, or like, I mean, I would have a lot of fun, and I actually was going to talk to you about this, about you and Tristan, but I'd have a lot of fun going to like do a mule deer hunt or a whitetail hunt and like do muzzleloader or rifle hunt or even stalking with a bow, like out in like Nebraska, Kansas, or, you know, something like out there.
For sure.
I love being active when I hunt. I don't, I mean, some people love just taking a break and being in the stand, and there's nothing wrong with that. I can't do that. It's just not my cup of tea.
For sure. That's why, you know, in the early season and late season too, but like, I love going duck hunting when it's, you know, it's a little warmer, conditions aren't right, you know. As I become older and smarter, whitetail hunting, you know, it's not always good to go bow hunting every single day. Like, everyone kind of knows that. You don't, you're going to wear out your spots. So, on days where the wind isn't right or I just don't think the conditions are right, I hate taking days off hunting, so I love going. That's why I love duck hunting. Because you can always kind of go out. And I'm not by any means a good waterfowl hunter, but if I shoot 2 or 3 ducks in a night, shit, I'm happy.
Oh, for sure.
And
for sure. Especially if you go by yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, and I got a dog now, so I love just taking her out, and she gets to work. There's nothing better, like you saying, you know, killing some geese over your own decoy. I mean, training a dog. She's not amazing, but training a dog and watching her do her first retrieve was one of the cooler things I've done.
That's pretty awesome.
So, what types of, like you said, you kind of hunt potholes sometimes. What kind of areas are you hunting for ducks? You know, like you said, when you're younger, you hunted the river a lot. And, I mean, I love the river, but where are you hunting ducks most?
Well, I mean, a lot of the people listening, they're all going to be in different areas, but pretty much you gotta scout them out. And I've hunted ducks in the middle of a field in a little tiny pothole, like 60, 70 yards wide and probably 80 yards long, like a small body of water. I've hunted them on lakes, hunted them on the rivers, you know, cattle ponds. You know, fields. Well, I mean, if you can, the thing is you got to find where they're going. And that's the ticket. I mean, you just got to find out where they're at. And you got, you know, some people like just see ducks, you know, in the middle of the day in some water. Well, normally in the morning, they're not there. That's just kind of where they're hanging out. And some people, like, forget this, like, especially geese. Geese are really typical, but, you know, what time you, more typically morning and afternoon is where you're going to find them feeding. And then in the midday, that's where they're going to lull.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to, like, if you're going to see ducks, you know, in the midday, don't expect to set up there in the morning and have them come in right away. They're not going to come probably till 9:30, 10 o'clock after they're done feeding. Vice versa, if you see ducks in the morning, don't set up there in the afternoon and expect to kill ducks like that night or right away. Like, they're gonna be later after they feed.
Yeah. What? So for ducks, what are you running kind of for decoy setup?
Depends. I mean, if it's field, I just throw out goose decoys and then mojos,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. I mean, you don't have to set out duck decoys when you're hunting ducks in the field.
Yep.
You can if you want, but I've killed plenty of ducks doing that way. It's just it's easier a little bit. But for water situation, I run 2 dozen, 3 dozen. Don't take much. Jerk cord, if it's not windy at all,
jerk cord.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're on the river, it's sometimes a little different.
Right. I mean, even on the river, it can be very calm.
Yeah.
Especially if you just get in a little pocket.
Yeah.
That rippling, true. that that rippling of the water on a calm day sets you apart from everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy what it'll do. It's, I personally think it works better than calling at them. When it's a calm day. And you typically, you know, you want to hunt them on a sunny day because that reflection of that water ripple is a lot more on a sunny day than a cloudy day. I've heard, you know, things about mojos on a cloudy day or a sunny day or, you know, on water, off water. I typically just always use a mojo. If you see them flare when they get 30 or 40 or even 50, then yeah, I'll probably pull the mojo. It's probably too much for them to, like, handle,
yeah.
I guess, or they've been educated and they know that that's a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I typically always use a mojo when I duck hunt. But like I said, I don't diehard duck hunt.
Yeah.
So I probably have messed up a lot of stuff and could have had better if I didn't use the mojo, I guess, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only reason I would say I would duck hunt over goose hunting is divers and mallards. When I go hunting with Stelt and we shoot cans, bluebills, buffies, that is fun. When you don't know what kind of duck you're gonna shoot, I think that's why I'm picking duck hunting.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more species too, a lot of different colors in the drakes. You know, that's super cool to do, is like shoot a widgeon and shoot a mallard, shoot a wood duck. Yeah. Redhead, canvasback, bluebill, all these different species, and they all have, you know, unique, cool things about them.
Yeah.
That's super cool. Where, you know, Canada geese are kind of different sizes.
No, yeah. For sure. I mean, don't get me wrong, goose hunting is fun. It's fun as hell, but I love going on the river, the Mississippi, and being able to shoot. You never know, really.
Right.
That's what's fun for me, I think. I know one day it was like, and it's different every day, but like when the birds are moving, one day we shot like three cans. I mean, there's like three or four of us down there, three cans, a couple of bluebills, a shitload of buffies. It's just, I don't know, it's different. And they're freaking tough birds, you know. If you don't kill them dead, they're diving. And
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think duck hunting is fun, especially when the deer hunt is bad.
Exactly. Oh yeah.
But yep. So I know you hunt a lot and you put a lot of time into Wisconsin, but you take a few trips out west, or even north. Where are you going, kinda? Yeah, I know, like,
well,
northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, where?
So, when I go to North Dakota, I got a little hunting hole, so I'll just say that it's not very far from where I live.
Mm-hmm.
But I have, so this is another thing between, I don't know, it's kind of like a fishing spot, man. You just never, but I'll say, like, kind of general area.
Yeah, you know, Fargo. Yeah, to give everyone.
But and as for, I went up to northern Minnesota this year with some Minnesota friends, and that was super cool. Got to watch like 2,000 geese migrate across Big Lake, and that was something I've never seen before, and that was super cool. I really enjoyed that. I have plans to go to Ohio. Back where I used to live, and hunt there in January. I really want to go out to my buddy's place in Idaho and shoot, like, ducks and geese in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to do that, shoot ducks and geese in the mountains.
Yeah.
That's a big dream of mine.
For sure. Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong, Wisconsin has some good waterfowl, but, I mean, like, when you go to North Dakota or, you know, Idaho, North Dakota is almost, it's almost easier just to hunt. Like, the land access, I feel like there's more land and water, more opportunities out there, maybe. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, they got, well, just this year they've changed it though, where farmers can now call the county and put their property in posted on electronically, so it's not, you know, you got to check that now, so it's easier to post without doing a post sign.
So is that going to be on like Onyx or something?
Yes, Onyx actually does. If you update your Onyx, it will have that that layer. But in the past, yes. I mean, there's it's just when you go out there for early goose and you see how many geese and how many ducks, but more so ducks. I mean, there's thousands of ducks in the early season, like breeding and brooding in these little potholes, and geese. But it's just a major flight path because of all the water. There's just so much water in North Dakota, and that geese and ducks will die in like 3 or 4 days if they don't have, you know, water. That's how they regulate their body temperature. And it's a natural flight path for them. They have food because we tilled up and plant all the prairie now, so there's just miles and miles of field with soybeans and corn, and they have water. I mean, it's a perfect combination. We humans created that for them, so it's just a natural flight path now.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, how in North Dakota you can't, you really don't have to ask permission if it's not posted, then it's public. And that's huge too. I totally agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Compared to Wisconsin, it's their flyaway is just, I feel like when you get in the right area of North Dakota, it's kind of hard to beat that. I know when you go up with a bunch of buddies from home, what kind of birds are you shooting when you're going to, you know, North Dakota? You go a little later and it opens in October, right?
Yeah, I go end of October, beginning of November. We're shooting greenheads, not mallards, if someone doesn't know that term. Mallards, green-winged teal. We shot canvasback, redheads, bluebills, ringneck, widgeon, wood duck, gadwalls, lots of gadwalls. Well, I've seen spoonbills out there, and I have seen, buffleheads, we've killed a lot of those, and I have seen, pintails, killed a lot of those. What was the other one that I've seen that I've never killed? Hooded Merganser. I've seen a hooded Merganser out there, too. I mean, literally almost all of the interior divers and puddle ducks, like almost all of them. Black ducks I've seen out there.
Yeah, I got to.
What's that?
I gotta get out there.
Yeah, it's crazy. And there's specks out there if you go far enough towards the Missouri River.
Yep.
Snow geese, snows and blues.
Yeah.
Killed my first blue goose last year.
Yeah, I saw there. That.
And lessers for the Canada geese and regular interior geese. And then they got what's called the graders. They kind of have like an white eyebrow.
Okay.
A lot of people mistake the graders for a true giant, but there's a lot of people think that they've killed a giant, but there's not very many. They actually were considered extinct in like 1970s for a while until someone re-found a flock in Rochester, Minnesota, actually. There's a big book about it. Scott Training's got a book or knows the book about it, but
yeah.
That's where I heard it from.
Well, besides, you know, kind of hunting, that's the fun part. I see kind of like on Instagram and whatnot, you've been getting into calling a lot. What has kind of been driving you to get into that more?
I don't know, man. I never was really that great, you know, at sports. I mean, I was athletic, you know. And another thing is, like, not being able to wrestle, like, and then also, like, quitting wrestling in high school. Like, that's one of my biggest regrets, man. Like, I missed that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was, I was athletic, but I wasn't like some people. And I don't know, this is just something that I truly love, like hunting. And I'm actually starting to get, you know, decent at it, and I like it, and I want to keep going, and I want to, I don't know, I guess the drive for the fact that, like, I don't know, I've never
the competitiveness.
It's very competitive. I'm a very, very competitive person.
Yeah, that's what I see kind of happening through it.
But I will say that I'm not competitive towards the other, like, callers like I would be, like, in a football game or a wrestling match.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of like a gentleman kind of competition where it's like you just want to go there to win, mm-hmm. but you will, like, be nice and you will talk up the other guys, and you want the other guys to do the best they can, because if they're not the best they can be, then you really have no competition and you're not truly the better caller, you know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no. It's
like you want them to always do their best. You want them to be, like, really, really good, because then if you beat them, then you truly know that you beat them.
Yeah. And it's kind of more what I'm kind of getting is you against you. When you're not the best caller, that, like, competitive side of you is wanting to do better for yourself more, and more so not beating the other person. And also what I'm kind of seeing is, like, when you do go to a competition, I feel like you kind of bullshit with everyone after the, you know, after you guys get done doing your competition, and you can learn a lot. And everyone loves hunting. It's the hunting world. It's not, you know, it's not the calling world where you're going there and you're trying to beat so-and-so and whatever. But you can learn a lot, and you can probably get a lot of connections, and it's different. It's not wrestling. It's not football. It's good fun.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you hit it right on the head.
I'm sure you've met some pretty cool dudes doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, yeah, you're right. I've met some pretty cool people.
Yeah. When did you kind of start or learn to call? I mean, yeah, you knew how to call when you were younger and little, but when did you kind of start hitting, like, I know nothing. Let's say I know nothing about calling. I really don't. I'm horseshit. But you're doing it like it's a music class. You're, like, hitting notes, and there's different notes. When did you kind of start learning about that?
So, I learned duck calling from Trey Skulski and his dad. You know, I learned how to use a duck call from them. And then I picked up a goose call. Started doing that for, I don't know, 3-4 years, just trying to, you know, just see what I could do. And then, I don't know, man, it was when I started field hunting is when I really, really wanted to learn how to call. And I think I was hearing, I don't know, I can't remember when I was hearing it, but who it was. I think it was a YouTube video, and I was hearing someone call crazy good. And I was like, holy crap, like, I want to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started trying to learn all these different notes, and you know, a year or so went by, and I was getting better, not advancing very much, but I was getting better, and I found this guy named Tim Steele,
mm-hmm.
and he's really good, and he's pretty local, and I just said, hey, sent him a message. I said, hey, man, I'm sure you probably get this all the time, but I was just wondering if, like, I could do an in-person calling session with you and you just teach me, you know. And at this point, I knew probably 60% of all the different kinds of notes you can make on a goose call.
Yeah.
And that was like a year and a half ago. And Tim just kind of started helping me with all these different notes. And the first thing he did was he tried to write me a sequence out, and he used arrows. And ever since then, I was like, I had music class in, you know, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and we learned to read music, and I was like, that's how I'm going to incorporate this. If anybody's looking to learn, like, how to put a sequence together or put, like, a routine together for competition calling or even for in the field, use piece of paper, use arrows for your clucks, bar them together for double clucks, and then, you know, QS is a quick spit, you know, things. That's what I do. That's how I learn my stuff. In my routine, and I know, you know, when I competition call, I know exactly what I'm going to do every part of the routine. I know which note's going to go where.
Yeah. No, that breaking it down like that, I think you should start making some YouTube videos or something on that. I bet a lot of people, I mean, and a lot of people do that, but, you know, your way could help someone else different than someone else's way, you know?
That is 100% right, because I have watched, like, 4 different videos all about the same thing, and I get something out of each one of them. Mm-hmm. And that's, I say, watch every possible video that you can about all of it. Like, Big Sean, Scott Trining has the Roost TV where he's going better 30 weeks to better calling. Like, do that. Watch Tim Steele's video. There's a guy named Josh Plades. Watch his videos. Kelly Powers has some videos. Field Hudnall has some videos. Scott Trining also has a video called Bad Grammar. Watch every single one of those. Tim Grounds has got stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
Watch all of them, because there's all something, you know, that they bring to the table that the other one might have missed, or clicks better with someone.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. So I guess it was a couple of weeks now, maybe a month, but you went to the Wisconsin kind of a state tournament, and you kind of won, or you did won. I shouldn't say you kind of won. you won a state title. That's kind of got to feel good after you've been putting a shitload of time in on something like that. What was kind of that experience like when you were there? What did you kind of learn while you were there?
So I actually drove down there after work one day. Slept in my truck. I didn't want to buy a hotel room. So I slept in my truck at a truck stop. And, I got up. And that was a crazy drive over there. I literally drove through a town that was underwater because it stormed so bad. Turned a 3-hour drive into 5. What I learned when I was there, there's a lot of actual waterfowl hunters in that area. I learned there was probably 2,000 people there. It was crazy.
Where were you?
It was crazy. Oshkosh.
Oh, Oshkosh is with the lake around Green Bay, you'd be really surprised. I'm on a few duck hunting forums that I just kind of look for stuff. I bought some decoys up in that area, and there's some serious waterfowl hunters up there.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
And I met some kids that were in the competition, and I got their Snapchats and stuff, and they're hammering the birds over there. Just hammering them.
Well, I think part of that is a lot of corn is off the fields now.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, there's not very much around here in Roberts, New Richmond, and whatnot, but but they're starting. They're starting. It just rained. I don't know where you're down in Madison, but it's been raining every 4 days.
Yeah, here. I know you don't have to lie to us. I know you just killed the 10-man limit. You can't say that there's not birds up there.
Well, I mean, a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while.
Well, then you killed all of them, piece of shit. Save some for the rest of us.
I mean, they're starting to migrate down. We had a week and a half ago, we had a real good push of a lot of north wind days, and there's like 3 to 4 north wind days cloudy this coming week, and that's really good for migration. So,
tell what I want. I didn't know what a north wind push was. For people that don't know, kind of just explain what that means. I mean, for us, it's obvious, but for people, you know, younger kids, whatever, I don't know who, no one's probably going to listen to this, but just explain again so I understand.
So a north wind push is, so in September, you get what's called molt and molt migration. And that's like 1 to 2 year olds, possibly 3 year olds. It's the non-breeding geese. And they are the first to migrate, and they really push on a cloudy day and a north wind day. But if you put cloudy and north winds together, it's like a crazy mega push. And there'll be 500, 600, 700 yards in the air. You won't see them driving down the road because they're so high up in the air. They look like little specks. but they will be flying south. And the reason, and you really want to have a cloudy night and a cloudy day with a north wind, because the geese usually migrate at night and they use the north star and they put that at their back, and that's how they know to fly south. And then in the daytime, they put the sun to their east. In the morning, they put the sun to their east, and they fly in that direction, and that's how they know to migrate. But that north wind, instead of flying against the wind, burning more energy, they're flying with the wind, so now they can fly even farther, and that's kind of what they do. But they migrate on about every north wind day, even through October, November, and December.
Yeah.
But once you start getting those, you know, later November, December, January days, it more comes with the cold.
Yeah.
How much water they have available. That's what starts pushing birds out at that length of time, because those birds will stay as long as they possibly can, as long as they have a good field with food and a good spot that has water that they can regulate the temperature.
When stuff starts freezing up north, get your guns ready, because the birds are coming.
Oh, yeah.
And
yep, birds will migrate on the front side of that and on the back side.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's with geese, it's kind of the same thing with ducks, you know. Northern birds and divers will start coming down, and they'll follow the Mississippi River. It's a little different because they follow the Mississippi. All over, I guess, too. But for when you're hunting the Mississippi, kind of on a north wind, birds will push down when it's cold, and they'll fly all night, too. I mean, they won't just fly during the day. They'll fly all night, especially on a full moon or something like that.
Yeah, I was reading an article, and a mallard will, in one migration, will lose 30% of its body fat in one push.
That's why they say, like, when you shoot a northern bird, and that fat layer on their breast is a quarter inch thick, that explains it.
Yeah.
This is kind of off topic, but speaking of fat, my cousin shot a deer this weekend. And the amount of fat on the early season doe like that was insane. And I don't know if it was like the Farmer's Almanac that said this, but I think we're going to have a shitty winter this year. I think the does know, or the deer know, when it's going to be a tough winter. They get that fat, and they bulk up early season, and they get ready. So just for you people out there that are kind of following the Farmer's Almanac, I got a little insight on that.
Perfect.
So, well, I know you got other shit you got to do tonight. You're a college student, and I'm sure you got to get out scouting birds here soon. So, that's kind of all I got. You got anything else to say?
No, man. It's been a pleasure being on this. I appreciate it. And
yeah,
it's awesome, man. I know in high school you, me, Trey, Tristan, Matthew, always Jacob, we always kind of dreamt about, you know, doing our hunting show and videotape. And I know we bought cameras and stuff like that. And it's super cool to see Jake's doing something. I'm going to just keep it hush-hush, but he's doing something. And you and Tristan are doing something, or you and Matthew. You know, I got my thing going. But
yeah,
it's super cool to see how all this stuff is. We're working out
for sure. We're growing up a little too fast, but no, sometime we should figure out a weekend we're all kind of free and maybe do a hunt sometime, all of us.
Oh, absolutely.
Be fun.
Absolutely.
So yeah, no, we'll keep in touch, man.
Sounds good, buddy.
All right, you have a good night. Thanks for coming on here.
For sure. You too.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye.
Boom, baby. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the Rush Valley Podcast. Please give us a follow on Instagram. Also, if you guys are listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a review for me. It helps out a lot. Again, I can't thank everyone enough for listening to this podcast. The feedback from everyone, yeah, it really means a lot. I can't wait to get more guests on this show. So if you ever have any questions or requests, just go to the website, go to the contact tab, and send us an email, whatever. I don't know how you really do it. DM us on Instagram. That's probably the easiest way. So, yeah. Make sure you continue to tune into the Valley, baby.